I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
If you don't know about flyer deals on Instacart, this message is for you. Flyer deals are like strolling through your favorite store looking for deals, but you're scrolling your phone and maybe you're in bed because getting delivery doesn't mean you have to miss deals like you get at the store, like the one creamer that doesn't make your stomach hurt or the pasta sauce you can't not buy when it's on sale. So download the Instacart app, shop flyers, and never miss a deal on one of your favorites. Plus, get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes.
Want to grow your business fast? With TikTok ads, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising your business on TikTok, now is the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/tiktokads, and grow your business fast.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities. And no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. ExpressPros.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Diving right back into it, 2 hours down, 2 hours to go here on Fesco and Dusty with Mac Maury as well. Bob Fesco, Dusty Likens with you on 96.5. The Fan will be with Royals manager Mac Trero in under an hour.
The skipper coming up.
Can't imagine he's in a bad mood.
I can't imagine the Royals losing another game this season.
Okay. I do want to get his perspective on, like, what he's doing watching that all happen.
Nothing. He doesn't have to, right?
I mean, like, yeah, just like... You're like, okay, they really are going to give us this one. They really are going to just keep doing, okay, all right.
Oh, yeah. So when did Meidroff become a soccer player and head that ball? I mean, my God, can you play the Denny stuff again, too, yeah, with the way that he finished out that game last night? Because Denny was fantastic.
Lead it first, in comes the pitch, jammed him in a high pop-up on the infield, and It's off the glove of the second baseman. They're going to throw the ball to second widely. They had a force play there. And here you go. The White Sox are on the verge of burping up this game. It's the old story, folks. He squares the body, gets it down. How are they going to mess this one up? No throw. Boozer picked it up, had no play. And the bases are loaded. And the White Sox are on the verge of handing the Royals the game. So I started to say, it's a familiar refrain, same old story. Good teams figure out a way to win in the late innings. Bad teams figure out a way to lose in the late innings. And boy, if we haven't seen a perfect example of that right here in front of us in the last 5 minutes, then you need another videotape, because this is just a perfect example. Jake, you said it off air. You said that might be the worst ninth inning of any major league game I have ever seen. And I've seen a few, and it would probably make my top five. That was,
it's up there.
It was embarrassing.
I mean, only Denny, right?
So there's Diddy Matthews describing last night's game. For those of you that got to watch it on TV or went to go see it, probably one of the more electric, entertaining games for your purpose, not the White Sox. But don't forget.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba, I'm loving it. Well, hello, everybody. Happy Wednesday.
All right, it is a Fesco and Dusty poll question Wednesday. So we asked, are you Team Mac with the Celtics or Team Bob with the Knicks? I refuse to take a vote. I have yet to vote on it because that's the only way I can see the percentages, but I can't because I don't want to pick a side. I'm staying neutral because I love watching this all burn in flames in front of me. So Mac or Bob, if either one of you, I'm sure, have picked your side, what is the percentages and where are we at with who's on what side of this game?
Yeah, I'm with you. I've not voted in this one because I'm not going to skew the results or anything. I'm sure Mac is voting.
Oh, you already hit one vote Celtics.
I actually haven't.
Somebody's got
to
do it.
I have the personal page, so I get to look at the percentages here. So has gotten a little closer here. Just under 100 votes. Team Bob, Knicks, obviously 57%, and I'm at 42%. Celtics.
Yeah, starting to close the gap a little bit. Yeah.
A little bit. We're coming here. Let's go.
That's so exactly right. I'm not set with that lead.
Yeah. Don't be talking. You know what?
Don't be talking smack.
So game two tonight, game one was supposed to be not that entertaining, but it was.
Electric.
Who said that?
Our guy. So I'm going to give you guys, you know, this is your time to shine. I get to sit back, have the brandy and the cigar in the room, and just watch you two do this thing called the NBA of Celtics and Knicks, and then tomorrow I get to come in and antagonize who was right or wrong and cut some audio. So
exactly. How
do we see this game going? What's different than game one than game two? What do we do here, fellas? Go ahead.
I'm going to throw out the scenario, Mac, and then you can respond to this, because great. I think we'll probably be on the same page, and anybody who watched the game is probably on the same page. Two things stood out from game one. Boston awful from three-point land, right?
Set a record.
They missed 45 three-point shots in one game.
That's all Binkley could get over. He couldn't get over. He's like, yeah, all I need to know about that is he missed 45 threes, Dust, man.
Yeah.
You know
bad
the numbers.
And it's been 30 years since the Chiefs and Cowboys played on Thanksgiving.
You know the numbers bad when Binkley's going to talk NBA and he's just going to clown you. Yeah, 45 by one team, 60 for both. That's like Mahomes throwing 90 passes and only completing five.
Yeah. Don't forget, 30 years since they played the Cowboys on Thanksgiving.
Hey, man, Dale Carter got ejected.
Yeah, Binkley, like, that's a milestone for Binkley and literally nobody else. Literally nobody else,
Kurt
right?
Kurt Likens, maybe.
Maybe, but even still, who remembers that game, right? Okay, so Boston was awful from three. The Knicks pooped the bed from the free throw 50-something line.
50-something percent.
Awful, right? Which one do you have faith in getting better tonight? Because I think that's going to be the difference in the game. And I think it's the Knicks at the free throw line because it's easier, right?
It is
easier to hit free throws. It's a closer shot than the three. You don't have any guardian, blah, blah, blah. So if one of those things is going to get better, in my opinion, I think it's going to be the Knicks from the free throw line. And if they're like 10 percentage points better than what they were, that's not a close game at the end. You're not going to overtime if they hit their free throws. So I think the Knicks are going to get better from the free throw line. I don't think Boston's going to be as bad as they were from three. But, man, now they're thinking, right? The wheels are spinning. Uh-oh. And if they miss the first couple of shots,
I'm nervous about that. Got to come out hot.
The other thing I'm nervous about from a Knicks perspective, I'm nervous about Jalen Brunson. Missed his last five shots. After that teardropper didn't go over a 27-foot man who Reggie Miller was acting like, you know, Mac and I were guarding him on the play.
He should have made that shot.
I guess because he's an NBA player, but
it's a hard shot.
It's harder than anybody's making it out to be, man. You got that guy jumping up. You had to loop that thing over him, and Mahomes would have made the shot. Bobby Witt would have made the shot.
Will tonight's game be entertaining?
See, there's a good question because
it is a good question.
Every game has kind of been entertaining for the last couple of days. We're due for a dud,
which is
right?
Part of why I said this would be the least entertaining. I want to just heighten that fact. Didn't say not entertaining, said least entertaining because these four series are dynamite. Dynamite.
That game last night in the second slate was not entertaining.
No, it was bad. That was bad.
Now, the reason I ask is because Vegas does not think this game is entertaining. Vegas thinks that Boston can hold a 10.5 point spread.
It's crazy.
Boston's getting, New York's getting 10.5?
Yes.
New York got less points in game one. So what they're thinking about is Boston going, screw this. It's time to unlaunch a three-party on them.
I mean,
the Celtics have lost game one of round two and three of the last four playoffs. Every time they've come back to win game two.
By 10.5?
Yeah, they don't have Larry Bird walking through that door, okay?
No, they've got the sixth leading scorer in playoff history for the Celtics. That's Jason Tatum. He'll be fifth. He'll be actually fourth after this playoffs is over. So, yeah, they've got Larry Bird's son, Jason Tatum.
How far away is he?
The thing is about your free throws and three-point question, Bob, is they're both going to improve. You make 10 more free throws, that's 10 more points. The Celtics make 8 more threes, 10 more threes, that's 30. So that game isn't going to work for the Knicks if that's what they're hoping to improve.
Yeah, right.
That would be my take here. I'm watching a few things here, and I think you mentioned at the start of the game is huge. If the Celtics come out bricking some threes, I'm going to be going, okay,
well, everybody's going to be nervous in that arena. Everybody. Yep. The players, the fans, everybody. Knicks don't have anything to lose. Again, they're up 1-0 in this series. They're not supposed to have one win in Boston, let alone in the series, right?
I think to point to that spread, Dusty, I think some of the reasons that's the case is the Knicks shot 45% from three. In that game. They were studs on defense in the second half. They were forcing turnovers. We mentioned the Celtics missing 45 threes, 25% from the arc, 40% from the field. They shot terribly from two as well.
Yeah.
Went to overtime, and the Knicks won by three. So if the Celtics just shoot average, that game isn't close probably either. So
you're right about that.
I think that's probably some of the reason for the spread.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, like, they were in control of that game and then went ice cold. They went San Francisco defense in the first Super Bowl win for the Chiefs. Yeah. I mean, there's no other analogy I can think of that's better than that one. But I hope the odds makers are completely wrong and we see a great game. Another great game. I don't want this game to be over with 5 minutes to go. Like Boston up 20 with 5 minutes to go. That's kind of one you could probably check off and say, all right, we're done. Knicks, we split the series in Boston. We're still in the lead. We still have the home court advantage, all that kind of stuff, right? So I don't even know if it's a must win for Boston tonight. I think it's more of a must win for the Knicks than it is for Boston.
What a take. I don't say must win for Boston, but I don't know. I think it's much more must win for the Celtics. The Knicks did their job.
I understand that, but you did your job, but now you got an opportunity to take it to the next level.
Yeah.
You've got an opportunity to really, really do your job, right? And you lose this game, you give the Celtics confidence again. They feel like they've got their swagger back. You know how momentum is in sports. People always want to say it's the next day's pitcher in baseball, and they're right about that. But, man, we've seen teams get on a heater and go. And if Boston gets on that heater tonight, I feel like they're not going to get off that heater.
Yeah, could happen.
Who wins? Does Boston cover 10.5?
Yeah, I honestly was doom and gloom a little bit yesterday. I've had time to think about this and what I just mentioned, some of those stats I think the Celtics are going to get a big win tonight.
See, I'm gonna say the Celtics win just because I want reverse osmosis going on here and the Knicks to hear this.
Damn it.
Some guy in Kansas City said you're not going to win. Oh, no. So we better go win. No, I think Boston does win tonight.
Yeah. Covers the points or no?
Yeah, there's a lot of garbage time.
That is a good point.
Thank you.
But you think it's an assertive win.
Yeah, I feel like it's a 7 to 10 point win by Boston, like and a 7 to 10 point type of win that never feels close for the Knicks. That's just my feeling going into this one. Like, again, they're still the defending champs. It's like betting against Patrick Mahomes. You're stupid if you do, right?
Could be. Coming up on the other side, we get more into what's happening in AA, soon AAA, plus this Royals roster and what it looks like so far because the boys have won 13 of 15. We'll dive into it on 96.5 The Fan. You're home for the Kansas City Royals.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at TheFan965 for behind-the-scenes content from the show. Kansas City's FM sports station, 96.5 The Fan.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you are suffering from some joint pain and you're thinking to yourself, what am I going to do to make myself feel better? I've got the answer for you, but it's not just me.
I've never understood why pharmacists have to stand so high up on the shelf. Like, why do I have to go all the way up to you? I never understand these pharmacists.
What are you, Christopher Walken over there?
I don't know. It sounds like Seinfeld to me. Yeah. So there's been an update.
Oh.
From this morning's news that broke in the NFL. Cowboys now say they have agreed to terms to acquire wide receiver George Pickens for a 2026 sixth round pick from the Steelers in exchange for a 2026 third-round pick and a 2027 fifth-round pick.
You lost me. It's a lot of picks for Pickens.
Say it again. So,
Cowboys have agreed to terms to acquire wide receiver George Pickens from the Steelers and a 2026 sixth-round pick in exchange for a 2026 third-round pick and a 2027 fifth round pick. So they got a third and a future fifth in the 2027 draft, and the Cowboys got Pickens and a sixth round pick from the Steelers. So, I mean, basically, please take him off of our hands.
Look, guys, It is, what do they say, elimination?
It's your problem now.
Yeah.
Addition by subtraction.
Addition by subtraction. What I was going to say, elimination by, I don't know what I was going
to say.
I have no idea what
I
was
going to say.
Yeah, but I didn't.
What the hell was that?
I had no idea what I was about to say in that situation, man. But sometimes it is. Look at how much better the Royals have gotten since they demoted MJ Melendez. You could hear it from Steven Spector. I mean, but seriously, sometimes you remove somebody off a team and you get better, right? Sometimes guys just aren't the right fit. And George Pickens clearly wasn't the right fit in Pittsburgh. Maybe he will be in Dallas. I doubt it. But it'll be interesting to see how that circus continues to unfold down there. And now where Pittsburgh goes moving forward, because they still need a quarterback.
Yeah, because what, they're going with Duck Hot? No, not
he. Mason Rudolph.
Mason Rudolph right now. Mason Rudolph.
Yeah, Mason Rudolph. But again, as the caller to Ben Maller show reported this morning, Rodgers did show him at the Derby yellow and black socks that he was wearing. So
it's practically a done deal.
I would imagine. You don't wear yellow and black socks to the Derby if you're not signing with the Steelers.
You're right.
I would just like you guys to respect my privacy as I go through these hard times.
Yeah, by the way, I'm wearing a wedding ring, yellow and black socks, but don't ask me about it. That's a definition of a narcissist right there.
Because he's married and wearing socks?
No, because he's doing all of that, and then people want to know about it. He says, respect my private life.
What color are your socks, Mac?
Not black and yellow.
Okay. No, black and yellow.
Who would have thought Bob would have dropped a Wiz Khalifa? Yeah, wow. TGOD, baby. So last night the Royals win. In case you missed it, it was hilarious. And this was Denny Matthews describing the action.
Lead at first, in comes the pitch, jammed him in a high pop up on the infield, and it's off the glove of the second baseman. They're going to throw the ball to second widely. They had a force play there. And here you go. The White Sox are on the verge of burping up this game. It's the old story, folks. He squares the body, gets it down. How are they going to mess this one up? No throw. Boozer picked it up, had no play. And the bases are loaded. And the White Sox are on the verge of handing the Royals the game.
How are they going to miss this one up?
I started to say, it's a familiar refrain, same old story. Good teams figure out a way to win in the late innings. Bad teams figure out a way to lose in the late innings. And boy, if we haven't seen a perfect example of that
right here in front of us in the last 5 minutes, then you need another videotape, because this is just a perfect example. Jake, you said it off air. You said that might be the worst ninth inning of any major league game I have ever seen. And I've seen a few, and it would probably make my top five. That was,
it's up there?
It was embarrassing.
I mean, Denny's been doing this 60 years, and that makes his top five of most depressing, disgusting.
I don't think it's four or five either.
No. I mean, that, I've never seen anything like that, honestly. Like, that was, from the beginning of that inning to the game ended, I mean, it was a laughingstock watching the Chicago White Sox try to play Major League Baseball in that inning.
Did you watch it live?
Yes.
Okay, so at what point were you telling yourself, because I did it right when the game, I was like, this game is not over. And it was 3-1?
3-1 going into the ninth.
Yeah, and I was like, there's no way I'm turning this off.
Oh, no, you never turn it off.
Mac and Drew and I were talking about the Pacers game, and Mac was like, damn it, Royals. And I was like, it ain't over yet. I think it was like my exact next text. And we're sitting there, and I'm watching the game, and I'm like, all right, that just happened. And as Denny says, they're on the verge of burping this game away.
Yeah. My wife was out there at the game last night.
That's right.
Honoring Coach Reynolds and you know, coaches with character for the CU and the Major Leagues Foundation and Blue Cross and Blue Shield. Great night at the ballpark. And I was at my daughter's soccer game, and we got home, and she texted me, are you watching this? And, you know, obviously her being ahead of the TV because she's live in person, you're like, oh, something really cool is about to happen, right? And then Mydroff takes one off the head. Once he took that ball off the head and looked like, you know, Matt Beisler out there heading the ball into the goal, I'm like, all right, this thing is over. You don't recover from your second baseman taking one off the forehead on the infield. Like, how you don't make that play. Well, it's very White Sockian. I mean, there's really no other way to put it. But you took that one right off the dome, and once he Jose Canseco'd that thing, I'm like, oh, this thing is over. And then you still had an opportunity to get that guy at second base, and Michael A. Taylor the third airballs that one into, you know, left field, and then we got yakety sacks going, and guys are circling the bases. I mean, as soon as that happened, you knew the Royals were going to win this thing.
And the Royals winning yesterday, Detroit did not play. Their game was postponed. Cleveland split a doubleheader. You're a half game behind Cleveland in the standings at 21-16. Cleveland 21-15. You're two games behind Detroit in the standings. This is why we say just keep beating bad teams.
That's right.
And Denny told you in that this was the definition, the visual definition of bad teams losing the game, good teams winning the game. And ESPN now saying chased it with his head as it was on. Get up on ESPN, the Royals.
I mean, for Major League Baseball to make anything on ESPN, you know it has to be, know, something ridiculous, because ESPN doesn't think baseball exists. And so when Mydroth takes the one off the dome, and then you've got like the NBA analyst and NFL analyst talking about it and making fun of it. That, I mean, that's the blooper of the year.
That
I don't know that anything
hurt.
Don't you think?
I mean, there's got to be a knot. I mean, that.
I mean, is that dude like you popping ibuprofen all night, or did it hit them like the White Sox logo on the hat? You know how they're raised a little bit? Did that provide a little padding? But
again, Steven Spector, you catch 100 out of 100. There's a Major League Baseball player dropping a pop.
It's a fair point. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Kramer, 100 out of 100.
Yeah, there's a guy who is a Major League player.
Wearing
is
the Chicago block in the gray with the white stripe down the leg.
That's right. And a black hat with a raised logo that prevented him from, you know, getting knocked out by the ball.
Damn.
But like that was romper room, Little League, however you want to phrase it. Like, it's hysterical.
Because I said Monday, I don't think the Royals will be under 500 the rest of the year. They're now five games above 500.
I don't think they'll lose the rest of the year.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting because if there is a game, I know there's wetter weather coming into the area later
on
tonight.
We got some wetter coming in.
Yeah. And depending if they can get this game in, because sometimes they, you know, postpone with sunny skies. But like,
are you speaking from last week's experience?
Whatever it was. We're going to postpone the game for 2 hours and then start it up right when the storm's going to be over the city. You want these guys playing lightning, Dusty?
They could have played 2 hours earlier and been done with it.
Either way. But yeah, so tonight they get the game in. Hopefully it's walk on the mound. You win this game. Then you move on to your guy that's been like your hoss in the rotation. That's Chris Bubich on Thursday afternoon. You win tonight, you should probably sweep, because then Chicago's just like, get us the hell out of here. We hate this place for the last 3 years. We don't want to be here anymore. But if you win tonight and you win tomorrow and you sweep the White Sox, which I think everybody's kind of hoping they do, obviously the series is over. You can't get any worse than 500 with them, but they're not that sort of team. You need to win 3 out of 4.
At least.
You need to win tonight. And then if you win tomorrow, the Royals will be 7 games above 500. And they'll play Boston, Houston, St. Louis.
All the uns.
And what's interesting about that is there's a significant chance that they don't fall under 500. Because, I mean, if there's 7 games above 500, I mean, yeah, they had the 6-game losing streak, but this team doesn't look like a team that's going to suffer underneath a terrible losing streak the rest of the year. They lost to Detroit and the Yankees and good teams, but they're dominating these bad teams. I know everybody's like, well, I want to see what happens when they play Detroit. I want to see what happens when they play Cleveland again. Boston's good. St. Louis is going to give you fits because they just care.
Can I ask just a sidebar real fast? Yeah. I know people do say that, but why? Why do you have to wait for that? Why can't you just enjoy the moment that we have finally had what we've wanted for a long time, and that's a sustainable baseball team, you know?
It's the proof is in the pudding, right?
I guess.
It's the same conversation that Buffalo Bills fans have. I don't care if you beat the Chiefs in the regular season. Beat them in the playoffs when it actually matters. I don't care if Aaron Judge hits 415 and I'm a Yankees fan. I want to see you win a World Series, actually perform in the postseason. Again, like your sister, hey, Aaron Judge hitting 417 October.
Right.
Fair enough.
But I will say this. We're talking about a baseball team that has basically been dormant for 40 years, save a couple of years, right? Mm-hmm. And so when they are having success, that's why I want to wipe 94 to 2010 out of everybody's mind, because when they are having success, you still have a lot of the, like the Eeyores, I call them, of the world going, well, they're not doing it against the good. But if you sit there and wait for them to do it against the good team, you're missing all this fun that people are having. And there were 16,300 people at the ballpark last night having a great time because this team came back and won a baseball game. That was a lot of fun. Who cares if it's against the White Sox or the Dodgers or whatever team they're playing? It's a Major League Baseball team, and our team continues to win. And the more cushion you can give yourself, the more freedom you kind of have, right? The more padding you've given yourself. So at the end of the year, you're not pressing and you're not pressured to get into the postseason. You've established a lot of wins early on and you've made your life easier. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to when the Chiefs were kind of on the come and they were beating Jacksonville and, you know, Oakland and Arizona. And then it was like, yeah, the Chiefs are 3-0. They put up good numbers, but now they're going to play the Colts. And it's like, what can they do against the Colts? That's the team I want to see if they can compete, because it goes back to the original statement. We're a playoff team. Mm-hmm. Okay. If you're a playoff team, you got to get to the playoffs, which is where your conversation fits in. Well, you can't be a playoff team unless you get into the playoffs. You can't get into the playoffs unless you win. So these games do matter. Put that in your pipe and smoke it, a.k.a. says Bob Fesco.
Right.
But where the fans come from is, yeah, this team's a playoff team. They were a playoff team last year. If they want to go further into the playoffs, they're going to have to prove to me that they can beat those teams that will be there.
But Buffalo beats Kansas City every year in the regular season and then doesn't go further in the playoffs.
But this is, I mean, again, this is one of those things where, like, Kansas City and Buffalo are always in the playoffs. The Royals are not always in the playoffs. The Royals were in the playoffs last year and got beat by Detroit or by the Yankees.
Sure.
The Royals last year played the Yankees 6 times and won once in the regular season. This time the Royals play the Yankees again and got swept. They played Detroit one game. And if you want to win your division, you're going to have to beat Detroit. So it needs to be happening in the regular season with Detroit. Whereas like the Yankees, it's just more so of a gratitude of satisfaction of like, well, we beat them in the regular season. We could beat this team. We could play against this team. I know that because I've seen it with my own eyeballs. Whereas like, I understand that, you know, you want to beat those teams as well, because just like in football, you want to beat Buffalo, you want to beat, you know, Cleveland and all those other teams, because standings matter outside of your division.
Yeah, but like when you make the playoffs, they're not looking at it and waiting the victories. And I think like this comes from the blendation, is that a word, of sport. Like we watch college sports, we go, well, you got to play a tough schedule and the schedule matters because you got to win these games and get these, you know, quad one wins in basketball that people talk about, for God's sakes. Professional sports isn't like that at all. You win a game against the White Sox, it is valued the same as if you win that game against the New York Yankees. At the end of the year, they're not going, okay, the Royals had 84 wins, but only 30% of them were against teams against 500, so they really only had 75 wins on the year, so we take a deduct. Like, we've gotten way too far in the analytics and stuff like this. Like, sometimes I think it's okay just to sit back and enjoy, you know, what's going on with the sport and not worry about who they didn't beat. Just enjoy that they are beating these teams. And if they continue to win these games, they're putting distance between themselves and everybody else. They're one of the better teams in baseball right now, regardless of who's on the schedule.
Yeah, just keep winning. Someone who keeps winning as well is Chris Bubich, who is in a top five conversation for a Cy Young Award so far in this early season of 2025,
yeah.
Which kind of gives me the, you know, the radar, you know, radar love of, is this the guy you move? Because I do not think your farm system is anybody you move. Mm-hmm. I think your farm system stays your farm system because, one, it's not that deep. Two, you need to build up something to have the credibility in the future to eventually move it. And you do have a lot of power on your active roster because somebody texted in this morning and said the Dodgers are losing pitchers. Royals need batting. Dodgers need pitching. Seems like a suitable fit to send Lugo. And I thought to myself, I was like, okay, I don't know about Lugo, but maybe, like we talked about 2 weeks ago, maybe you move a guy like Chris Bubich, right? You got one more year left of arbitration. He's a UFA in 2027.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to pay Chris Bubich what ESPN predicts that he could possibly make, which is a $100 million contract?
Yeah, that's a lot of money for Chris Bubich, right? Or for anybody. I mean, it's $100 million. I guess in baseball terms, though, it probably isn't.
Lefties get paid and so do pitchers, and you add that together, that market is rich.
Right. And so I think when I saw that yesterday on ESPN that he could be a guy that gets a $100 million contract, again, he's only making $3 million this year, has another year of arbitration. So
only $3 million. I joke.
Yeah, but for baseball terms, that's nothing, right?
Pennies.
It is. He's a pauper in Major League Baseball compared to some of these guys, right? But I think with Chris Bubich and his contract situation, if you were to trade him at the trade deadline, the acquiring team would have a year and a half of control under Chris Bubich. So you got a year of arbitration under Chris Bubich, which is great for any team trying to acquire him. The Royals' biggest strength right now is their pitching. They're on pace to have the best rotation they've ever had in the history of their franchise. So you've got some strength there. You've got that kid down in the minor leagues from Chillicothe who went out there and dominated, you know, the other day. You've got depth with Lorenzen. You've got this Kyle Wright guy that's still kind of floating around out there that they acquired based on getting him back for some time this season. We'll see if he ever amounts to anything. So you've got a kind of a surplus of pitching. And remember, in the playoffs, you probably need about three starters for yourself. So you have the opportunity to trade a guy. And I do agree with you at the big league level because there isn't enough at the minor league level to get you, I don't think, back in return what you really want. And that's a Ben Zobrist legitimate type of bat. But if you have a pitcher, a lefty, that is a year and a half of controllability, you can really get something nice back in return. And that's how trades work in baseball. I know we always want to trade the MJ Melendezes of the world or the Hunter Renfros. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants those guys. Mm-hmm. Nobody in baseball is interested in taking on those guys. But they would be interested in taking on Chris Bubich. There could be a bidding war for a guy like Chris Bubich, and you can get a legitimate bat back in return. And I'm not talking about like Taylor Ward or some of these other guys that we've kind of talked about that are hitting 178. I'm talking about you can get a legitimate bat in return. If a team really wants Chris Bubich, then you're going to have to pay for it. And that's the beauty of where the Royals are right now. They can go to the table, at the bargaining table, and say, we've got a lot of good pitching. What are you willing to give up in return? Start bidding wars between teams. I think the Royals sit in the catbird seat this trade deadline.
Yeah, and I think that I don't know the honest question is that they're stronger on their starting rotation or they're stronger in their bullpen because Hunter Harvey hasn't really pitched since the – obviously he's been hurt, but before that he was great. You have Estevez. You have Daniel Lynch.
May be a guy you may look to trade.
And Lynch is a guy like – look, you have a surplus of arms.
You do.
And Daniel Lynch is a guy who everybody, I feel like, after every game is like, if they lose, it's like, where was Lynch in the sixth? And if they win, it's like, see, Lynch continues to prove that he's got what it takes. He should be a two-inning guy. Lynch has a lot of value as a lefty bullpen specialist.
But he could also work his way back as a starter, too. There's and a team could. Out there, I'm sure, that would say, we love him as a starter. You know?
And you could. And, you know, he's also a guy that, you know, by all means, let's say that you're going down your playoff stretch and you know how it might line up because we heard Ned talk to us about that with Yordano Ventura when they were getting ready for the 14 playoff run. That they're like, well, we pitch him today. He's not going to be able to pitch until then. But if we have this one guy who can come in and pitch, that guy can really benefit for us. And then we can move him to the bullpen because he's still got a few innings left. And like Daniel Lynch is a name that I would keep an eye on because obviously if I had a perfect scenario, I don't think you would have to acquire anybody. I think what you would do is you would hope that Caglione stays
up to beat and goes to AAA and absolutely rips the cover off the ball. And then September 1st, when you can update your rosters, then all of a sudden you put Cags on your active roster. You never have to trade anybody. You don't have to worry about, you know, getting rid of somebody. You keep Chris Bubich. And then in the offseason, if it doesn't go the way you want to do it, winter meetings look very interesting with Chris Bubich's name on it because there was the anomaly that Jack Caglione is ready for the majors. We all know we're pumping the brakes. He's got to go through AAA first. But maybe that's their plan. I'm not saying it is. I doubt that by 100%. I'm not going to say 100%, but I doubt that's JJ's plan. But so be it. What if it is? That's a luxury thing that you have where maybe you don't have to make a move, but if you're going to make a move, it's going to have to be Bubich. It's going to have to be Lugo. It's going to have to be like Daniel Lynch maybe. But what sort of bat do you actually need if this lineup is doing its thing right
well,
now?
Well, you still need a bat.
You do, for sure.
You need an outfielder. You really do. I mean, it's still a weak point for this team. I was looking at the Athletic. They had a write-up about, like, the weakest link on everybody's team. And for the Royals, it was everybody not named Bobby Witt Jr. in the lineup, which I thought was a cheap shot at this because that's Garcia's lazy, playing. Right? Lazy. That's what I should have said. Great comment by you. That it's a lazy write-up because Drew Waters is hitting the ball. Great. Mikel Garcia
could be an all-star.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. He could be an all-star with the way that he's playing now. But if you wait to the winter, you've lost leverage with Chris Bubich because teams like these guys for as much as they can possibly get him. You go into the winter meetings, then you only have one controllable year of Chris Bubich. So the return on investment, if you will, is going to be a lot less than what it would be at the trade deadline. And at the trade deadline, sometimes you get a lot of desperate teams, too, that maybe are willing to overpay. But it's the first time since they went out and got Ben Zobrist that I think the Royals have the ability to go out there and have real ammo to get a legitimate big league bat and a guy that can come in here and fit into your outfield and be a major upgrade over everything that you have. And Kyle Isbell's playing well, too, guys. Like, I mean, nobody wants to talk about him at the bottom of the lineup, but I feel like he's a productive bat in this lineup. And so there are some guys that are starting to get better, but reinforcements also make guys better, too, because in 14 and 15, those guys talked about it when they went out and got, you know, it was like Raul Ibanez or whoever it was. The guy's like, oh, they believe in us. They're adding to the roster. And that gives those guys inside that clubhouse a big boost as well, especially in June and July and August when it's the dog days and you're trying to get through it. You go out and infuse that clubhouse with a star, a bat, guys that people know, that fans know. You've created an excitement with your players, too.
A few things from the text line. Somebody from the 479 says, Bubich is plus 6,000 to win the Cy Young. I'm going off what I saw, not betting-wise, but in the top five names of baseball early on in the season. Bubich's name was up there along with Tarik Skubal, who is a repeat offender, is what they're looking like. The other thing, too, that I'm seeing is, like, you can't trade Bubich. Why trade Bubich? He's a future. I don't know if the Royals are going to pay him. I really don't know if they're going to give him that money because, yeah, Sherman has shown... Mr. Sherman has shown that he's given money to Bobby Witt Jr. and Nicole Reagans, and really to nobody else.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and if you want all these guys to stay, don't be pissed when they announce the stadium wherever they announce it, because you need to generate revenue. That's how you're able to keep these guys. You're able to keep these guys by the revenue that comes in. And ballpark alone doesn't do that. That's why you need that infrastructure. You need those ballpark villages. You need those, you know, different things to generate money 365 days of the year so they can go out and spend. And, you know, I was talking to some people about John Sherman yesterday about, you know, some people still have a bad reputation and think bad things that he's not like a great, he's an unbelievable owner. We are so lucky to have John Sherman owning our team right now. He's investing back at the ball club. He's tried to do great things for Kansas City. He's just a great Kansas Cityan with all of the charitable, places that, like, I think it's over 33 different foundations he supports. He's adopting children. He's paying for school with the Sherman Scholars Program. Like, this is the guy that we want running our ball club right now, and he needs help from us with the new stadium and the development around it to pump more money into the team so he can keep these players, and we're not having these conversations about potentially having to trade somebody because they're not going to be able to afford them.
We are going to have a conversation about somebody suing the NFL because they have caused him distress.
That's funny
and true on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
Hey, it's Michael Wacha, and you're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Royals baseball, 96.5 The Fan.
From the 816
6. Dusty, you said he hasn't paid anyone, but who before now have you wanted him to pay besides Bobby? He also gave Salvi his last contract. Didn't pay Santander.
Well, they were $30 million apart.
Again, yeah. I'm just using that. I'm not saying that he won't. I'm just saying, like, he hasn't. Unless you, like, Bubic isn't on that level with those guys. Like, he's just not a superstar.
No, they've paid their two superstars.
Yes. Which I have no issues with that. But, right. I mean, like, I hope he, I mean, I would love it. I'm advocating for him to pay Chris Bubic. I'm just going off recent history that it took an anomaly and Bobby Witt Jr. to be drafted and actually pan out as a prospect in the Royals for once in my life. And then two, they got a really good deal when they sent Aroldis Chapman to Texas for Cole Reagans, and he proved that he could be that guy, and he's continued to prove to be that guy.
And he got paid. And the other thing is, too, I don't think anybody in their right mind or wrong mind, and I'm included in this one, I don't think we can really make, like, we don't know what John Sherman is totally like as an owner of this team. I think there's a lot of people that still think David Glass owns this team, and he does not own this team. And we're not playing by the Glass rules anymore here in Kansas City when it comes to our baseball team. We're playing by the John Sherman rules. And I don't know that we really know all of those John Sherman rules yet. He bought the team. Mm. COVID happened. Then half crowd happened. Then there was the lockout that happened. Oh, that's the first 3 years you owned a baseball team? Oh, that sounds like a lot of fun. And so now, since we've been back to normal in Major League Baseball, the Royals have been to the postseason. They are going to go to the postseason again this year. He's paid Bobby Witt Jr. He's paid Cole Reagans. And so the track record shows that when it's normal baseball and we're not dealing with pandemics and lockouts and crap like that, John Sherman's a really good owner. And it shows that he's going to put his money out there and invest in this team. And even more so when he has more money to invest in this team. And that's, again, why the ballpark is such an important factor. Without that, we can't invest in guys because I don't know where the money's coming from in baseball.
And again, you can't use hindsight as a trade because people are like, well, Santander's hitting 180 for the Jays. Yeah, well, again, and then somebody says, why would he pay for a product of a small ballpark? He wasn't worth that amount of money. Again, I don't know why. I'm just telling you that he did not. Like, they said, go get a guy, and he didn't want to pay him that money. So, yeah, I'm not saying that, like, he's like, well, he's just a victim of the Baltimore's park. I'm just saying, like, he didn't pay him. If he was going to pay somebody, then yes.
Well, that was the guy they targeted this offseason. They offered him $66 million. He signed for $96 million. You would do the same thing. And it's probably good that they didn't go up to that.
They spent money on guys like Waka. They spent money on guys like Reagans to avoid arbitration. Right. They spent money on guys like Lugo.
Right.
They spent money on that, like, Estevez, they worked out. They traded.
They signed him in free agency. Yeah.
Those are the type of players they pay. The conversation goes to, I don't need proof that he spends money. I'm telling you, like, he spends money, but I don't know if he's willingly going to spend $100 million plus on Chris Bubic.
Right. That's all we're saying. And that's a fair question to have. Has Chris Bubic earned a $100 million contract based on April and half of May and a little bit of last season? Hell no, he hasn't earned that money yet. And so if you have the opportunity to trade Chris Bubic right now, where his value is as high as it's ever been, and get yourself an everyday outfielder, legitimate bat in this lineup, you make that move. The conversation. People get so mad about this.
Yeah,
kind
and
of
the
stuff,
fact
right?
that like you can say that Santander wasn't worth it now because he's hitting 180. That's hindsight. That doesn't work. Everybody on Vern's pregame show and Vern's hot stove show was like, "Well, I'm really disappointed we didn't get that Santander guy." Now that he has a 180 number in front of your face, it's easy to say like, "Glad we didn't do that." See, he didn't work out in Toronto. See, Sherman knew what he was doing. Hindsight doesn't work that way. Like, oh, well, I would have bet that bet if I would have gotten it in, but I wasn't in Kansas, and of course it hit. I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, like, exactly. And you don't know that he'd be hitting 180-something here in Kansas. Well, you don't know. Like, you can't use the if-then statements. Well, if Santander's hitting 180 in Toronto, then he would be hitting 180 in Kansas City. We don't know. He could have played the White Sox a number of times and really fattened his average.
No, and I'm with you, 913. Call up Cax. I'm with you. Like, I want it, but he's got to go to AAA first. Like, they've got to get him out of this AA. That's where that conversation was.
We'll revisit that in the next hour because you made a really good point about that off the air that I think we need to bring on the air.
Some guy's suing the NFL over emotional distress caused by Shador slipping to the fifth round.
What did you say about Mel Kiper?
Yeah, some guy is suing the NFL over emotional distress that was caused by Shador slipping to the fifth round. if you had one chance to sue, who in sports would you sue over emotional distress?
Mike Bibby. Still bothers
97?
Me today. Yeah, still haunts me today.
That's your best Jayhawks team right there.
It really was. Like that. That
other than the one that didn't count because of COVID.
Right, yeah. But that was the best one when I was in college. And Mike Bibby killed my hopes and dreams of a Final Four when I was in college. So screw him!
Him and Miles Simon.
I mean, we're almost 30 years removed from that damn team. And I'm still not over that one. So if I'm suing somebody for emotional distress, hey, Mike Bibby, I'm serving you papers, my man. You should get Bibby on the show so him and I can talk.
Be careful. He's yoked now. He's stacked.
Dude, yeah, he's huge.
What is he doing these days?
Apparently lifting weights.
Lifting
is he coaching
weights.
Somebody?
He
or?
Was at some point. I don't
That's
know.
That's what I thought. Get him on the show. Tell him we got this guy who's still mad at you for 30 years. Let's go. We got June and July coming up. Let's talk it out.
All right.
Bibby on the show would be epic.
I'm putting it on the dock. Dusty?
Probably Lynn Elliott, because when I was a kid, that was my first like Chiefs game. Because I feel like in Kansas City, when you're born and raised here, your dad or your parents have to find out at what age are you okay to be taken to a Chiefs game because they kind of get rowdy.
Well, I think it's a pretty, like, we went through that with the girls.
Yeah.
Like, do we really want to take them to Arrowhead?
My buddies go through it all the time. Like, last year, I think his son was 7. He's like preseason age. We're going to take him to a preseason game, but we're going to go to the one that actually, it's like preseason game, I think it was like 2, and Arrowhead or whatever it was. And he was like, that's a good one to kind of get the feel. Like, there's going to be some sort of action. It's warm outside. People are pining for football. And it's a meaningful game because the starters are going to play maybe into the late second quarter. So he took him there.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable 6-blade shaves, Swift Rinse and 4 blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit DollarShaveClub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
Went to the Colts game. Lynn Elliott misses the field goals. Jim Harbaugh of the Colts wins that game. They go on to play Pittsburgh in the next round and lose to Neil O'Donnell. Pittsburgh would go to the Super Bowl and play, I believe, Dallas and lose.
Yeah.
And that was the year, man. Like, that was, I believe, 95.
That was your first game? Is that what you said?
That was my first Chiefs game.
Years. So you were 7.
Jeez. Yeah. So that was
That's
that
early.
Age.
That's early.
And it was freezing cold. And
I think the behavior's gotten worse, though, than it was.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know.
And, you know, I'm not rich, so I don't sit in the nice seats where it's like, sir, to your left is the hot chocolate, to your right is...
Walter Pennington's coming.
Yes, please, sit down. You can close the glass if
But
it's
also
cold.
In that day and age, that really... I mean, there was a couple of those, but it wasn't like it is today.
It was cold. Yeah. It was really, really cold. And I think my stepdad still has the picture of me on his desk, and I'm, like, bundled up, ski goggles, ski everything.
Heck, I
went home just bawling my eyes out because that... Son of a buck, Lynn Elliott missed like 3 field goals. And all I heard the next like 2 years of my life was like, Lynn Elliott. And then 97 happened. And Denver came into Arrowhead. And they beat us. And we lost. And the Chiefs were 14-3 that year. The best defense in the league. And who won the damn Super Bowl? The Denver Broncos. So my life was very tough.
Yeah, the Lynn Elliott thing kind of dissipated for us when we had him on a few years now, probably 8 years ago now, and he came on and talked about the whole thing and, you know, how his life was ruined because of that. You're like, man, I feel bad for this guy. But I think we took our kids to their first game during COVID because it was nobody there. It was great. And they got their first Arrowhead experience against the Falcons at a COVID. We had the whole section to ourselves. It was like going to a baseball game. You just kind of casually walked in. I'm like, this is awesome, right? And now, obviously, we take them a little bit more that they're of high school age. But no, we had those conversations around the house. I was very like, I'm not taking them to they're old enough because a lot of stuff happens out there that I've seen at Arrowhead, from, you know, people getting it on in the parking lot, the people passed out, people puking, you know, like all this kind of stuff. That bus is a rock and don't come a knocking this year, Mac. Do you understand me?
Of course.
Oh, gosh.
If you did that, I would feel so disrespected.
I know you and Ralph are close, but damn. I'd say D Ford, but we could talk more about that later. We got to play Hey Matt.
That's right. Mac Cotrero, Royals manager, joins us on the other side here at 96.5 The Fan, your home for the Kansas City Royals.
Fesco and Dusty. Subscribe and watch the show on YouTube by going to our channel at The Fan 96.5, Kansas City's FM sports station, 96.5 The Fan.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now, and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Friedman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The revolution redefined.
All of us who work in the media, we got to run a business and we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because I think most of us, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.